Serial Entrepreneur.
Hello and welcome to the Serial Entrepreneur podcast. You are listening with me, your host, Anna, and carrying on with the women in business slash female founders theme of this podcast, today I'm bringing you two very exciting guests. The first, Michelle Hua, founder and CEO of Made With Glove, and also works as a speaker and a consultant, and the lovely Susan Fowler, co-founder and CMO of Fowler Janes Limited, and again, also entrepreneur, managing director and ambassador, and also both overall just queen of the world. Ladies, how are you? Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for that lovely intro, Anna. We're great. Oh, well, I'm great, thank you.
I'm doing fabulous. I'm sitting with two amazing women and now, you know, queens of the world on top of that. I got this new title. I'm thrilled. My life is good.
Well, ladies, while we adjust our crowns, my first question to you, as it is to everyone else that appears on the podcast, is tell me, what is your favourite cereal and why?
I think I'll go first. So my favourite cereal is actually an Australian brand. Well, Kellogg's, I think they do have it in the UK as well, but it's Sultana bran. It actually tastes different in the UK. I think there may be less or more Sultanas, I'm not sure, but I do need to do a side-by-side taste test when my parents come over and bring me a box from Australia. But I just love the juicy Sultanas and the combination of the bran in Australia.
Amazing. And Susan?
There's a very specific brand of Cheerios that comes out seasonally in the U.S. It's called Pumpkin Spice Cheerios because, yes, it's amazing. It's one of those things where, you know, pumpkin spice lattes are like a thing, especially in America, definitely has come, you know, different parts of the world. But they basically in the U.S. around September, October, everything turns pumpkin flavored. And it is just amazing, delicious. And for me, it's not uncommon for me to maybe stuff a couple boxes of these in my suitcase when I come back from like Halloween time. Yeah.
That is amazing. America have like some of the greatest food inventions ever. I mean, I'm like the biggest fan of candy corn ever, which I know is quite controversial, but oh my goodness, like if we could get candy corn over in the UK, I would be so much larger than I actually am. But no, yeah, so I am really jealous of your American cuisine back from home. Thank you, ladies. They're great answers. And also, like, kind of both from different countries. So it's good to, you know, bring our readers a few different cereals. Before we spend all the episode talking about cereal, tell me more about both of you. I mean, I've read so much about you. You're both such inspirational women. But for our listeners that may not know, tell me about yourselves, your background, your businesses. The stage is yours. Michelle, should we start with you?
So as you said, I'm the founder and CEO of Made With Glove. It's a UK wearable tech startup designing heated gloves. I'm also a consultant for the global talent visa endorsement process, and we'll go through that later, I think. I was born in Vietnam, but I grew up in Perth, Western Australia, and I grew up there from when I was 6 months old. So I consider myself more of an Australian than a Vietnamese, but I do have both cultures in me. I was a commercial lawyer for 8 years before quitting my job and becoming a tech entrepreneur. And how I started was I was a winner of a tech hackathon, and that's what just completely kickstarted my business. Spent 7 years in the UK, basically Manchester, Newcastle and in London. And my main achievements, and I like to talk about this only because we need to celebrate more about what we've achieved. Yes, there's lots of failures along the way, but one of my biggest professional and personal achievements was being endorsed with exceptional talent in digital tech by Tech Nation. That just meant so much to me, especially with the ability to live and work in the UK, and that was my main goal. I've won, you know, various tech startup awards, an advocate for women and diversity in tech. I also co-founded Women of Wearables, and I organise International Women's Day events, and I'm heavily involved in the UK tech community.
Amazing, amazing. And Susan?
Yeah, let's see. So so you can probably tell by my very strong accent that I'm American. I'm actually originally from a small state called Ohio that nobody knows about. Lots of cornfields, small town, good times, candy corn, and you know, the pumpkin spice Cheerios, the good times. My professional background is, so I am the managing director for Fowler Janes Limited, which focuses on marketing and business growth services. specifically for me, I take on different clients in regards of, I do chief marketing officer work on demand, business growth. I have about 15 years experience in B2C, B2B, for Fortune 500s, mid-caps, startups. I work with all kinds of different brands from small to large. Some of the more well-known ones, I've worked with General Electric for a while, Google, Airbnb, Home Depot, Marriott, United Nations, Visa, Southwest Airlines, all those good ones. And I kind of started my career in the Ritz-Carlton Hotel Company specifically, going through and as a guest relations manager and then eventually as a corporate advisory board member for all the properties to set customer experience design, bringing in a new CRM. Really a cool opportunity that really taught, like, kind of set the foundation for my career. And then really a lot of my kind of startup experience started around working in the GE LED lighting division. So when it was just a startup division, and a really cool time, we went for just a few million to like half a billion within about 5 years, which was incredible and cool. It's been a wild ride. I'm also an ambassador for the Tech Nation Visa, which Michelle and I are both on, that, it, as she said, enabled us to actually come to England, to the United Kingdom. And it's been such a blessing, because obviously it's not always easy to get here. That's the first thing I think, you know, a lot of us discover is, I'd love to start a business here, but how do you do that? So very grateful for that. And I love helping people to come onto the visa and have that opportunity as well. And I also help run the alumni chapter of all the people that have gotten the visa. So really cool, incredible talent, and just such a privilege to know such amazing people.
Oh, again, amazing. And it seems like there's so many similarities and obviously differences between you both. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, I'm excited to chat to you both today about bringing businesses over from overseas to the UK and the challenges that can arise for people. You know, when you both decided you wanted to come over to the UK, obviously you'd worked in business before, but then obviously start business over here. How did you start the process? Like, where did your thought process that you wanted to come to the UK come from? And, you know, what did you do first?
So my entrepreneurial journey started in the UK when actually I was working remotely as a solicitor in the UK for the Australian government. I shared an office space with other tech entrepreneurs and I learned so much from them that it kind of inspired me. And there was a wearable tech hackathon, which I mentioned, that was scheduled at that co-working space. And I had an idea of a heated glove, and I grabbed my idea and my friends, and we entered. They were an engineer and a product designer, so I had a good team. I have no technical background though, I just had the idea, and we actually won. And that just completely kickstarted my business, and I registered Made with Glove within 2 weeks.
Wow, that's amazing. And you were over in the UK when you came?
Yeah, so I was actually on a spousal visa at the time. My plan was to move to the UK for 12 months, and I was working remotely as a solicitor, and my boss said, yeah, okay, you're only going for 12 months, you know, you'll come back, it's fine, we'll keep your job and you work over there. I extended it for another year, and then after my relationship broke down, I thought, I'm actually gonna stay. So I decided to stay. I got an entrepreneur's visa at the time, and that's how I started my business. And it all kind of happened around the winning the hackathon, you know, the relationship, the visa, the entrepreneur's visa, it all happened at the same time, and I think the stars and timing just aligned.
Amazing, amazing to hear. And Susan, tell us a little bit kind of about your journey and how your business started.
Oh, it's really interesting. So I'm kind of a corporate dropout. So I know, right? It's crazy. And it was really getting the opportunity to very, you know, young time in my career to be part of like a startup division for something, for one of the, you know, the best companies in the world, that was, you know, to watch it grow so fast and see that journey. I mean, I had the opportunity to launch, I think, like, you know, over like, I think like, you know, 80 products or something. And it was over like $100 million that it grossed. It was just an incredible opportunity to learn so much. And it started to, when you start to see it happen and you're kind of a part of it, you start to think, oh, well, that would be interesting if I could do something like that. And kind of as a lot of entrepreneurs say, I had a crazy trajectory, and you know, eventually it just kind of dropped out of GE and just started traveling all over the world for a year. And fortuitously ended up in London at the end, and I would be sitting there with some of the friends I had made, and they were entrepreneurs, and they were talking about, oh, I'm thinking about doing this. And I said, well, you know, they talk about a business idea, and I would start to say, you know, start to pick at it and say, well, what about this? How are you going to launch that product? How are you going to go ahead? What's the market? Starting to ask the questions, they're like, and we would start having these long conversations. They're like, you should do this. This is a great opportunity. You have a skill set that could be useful that maybe a lot of entrepreneurs are still trying to develop. And I saw the opportunity, and it wasn't a straight line to getting to London. But eventually, you know, I made it here, was able to go ahead and have that opportunity, contribute that talent, and watch businesses grow. And it's just something that I love, going into a business almost like a doctor and saying, where are the opportunities and where are the roadblocks and how do we kind of redesign things and create maximum growth. So it's just cool. It's intellectually stimulating. It's fun. Yeah.
No, definitely. And speaking to both of you, a question just kind of popped into my head, but what was it that initially attracted you to London, or what made you kind of choose London as, you know, the destination for your business, or as that part of your journey?
So why London? You know, it's interesting because when I came here, you know, it wasn't the first place I thought of. In fact, you know, I did technically start my business in San Francisco, actually, you know, starting out of Silicon Valley. But London, for me, I have to say, on a personal and professional level, is a place that is near and dear to my heart, in the regard that when I came here, it just, everything felt right. It aligned with who I am in terms of just all the things socially, the history, the culture, the arts, the positioning, even geographically. You know, it was just a place that I absolutely adored. But then from a professional standpoint, you know, at the time, and I think this figure might still hold true, it was one of the largest percentages of GDP of digital tech growth, basically, of that sector in the world. Obviously, percentage versus, you know, in total is different, but I was shocked to learn that. And, you know, I was amazed to see how many resources there are. And I tell other Americans that are coming here that are kind of like, well, I want to be in Silicon Valley, you know, that's the place where everything's going on. But I look at them and I say, but here's the thing, I feel like because there can be some barriers to entry, you know, example, the visas, things like that, this is a less saturated market in some ways. And I feel there's a lot of white space. And because San Francisco, everybody's disrupting everywhere, you know, which is great and it's fine. But here there's maybe, because not every single person, there's obviously more diversity, there's other things going on in London besides just, you know, disrupting everything, that creates more white space. I think there's an opportunity there, in my opinion. Michelle?
Yeah, that's really good. I actually never really thought about that, only because I decided Manchester. And that was only because I landed in Manchester at first, so I decided to stay. Manchester and the northeast and northwest, because after Manchester I moved to Newcastle. So I'm actually flying the flag for the north at the moment. But that's not to say that I wasn't in London. I was in London like every month for, you know, 7 years. It was crazy. And I had such a great network and support system in Manchester and Newcastle. Those tech ecosystems up there, really collegial, supportive. And that's where I won the hackathon as well. So all my support came from up north. And I did have a moment of, I'm going to move to London. But the whole selling my car, I felt that I could have the best of both worlds by living in Manchester, because I had, you know, a really nice life in Manchester. But if I wanted the really busy city and find gaps in the market as well, I could go down to London. And that's, I'm going to divert, but I started the Women of Wearables organization with my co-founder who lived in London. So that was my, you know, my drive going down to London. And you're saying white space and opportunities. Absolutely. And that's why, you know, that's why we did what we did in London. So yeah, Manchester and Newcastle are fantastic ecosystems.
Amazing. And it's really interesting to say, like you said, flying the flag for the North. How was the startup and the entrepreneurial scene up in Manchester and Newcastle and the North kind of in general compared to London? Like, I'm really interested to find loads of startups and new businesses up there. But when you speak to people that are in London, a lot of them say you need to be in London, really, you know.
Yeah, that was really disappointing, because I was from Manchester. There was that all the time. And actually, I like to go against against the grain. I like to do something different. And I was always flying the flag for the North. There are so many great startups up in the North. I think even just saying you're from Manchester, people just completely discount you. And hearing lots of success stories coming out of Manchester and people actually opening up their eyes and accepting it, I think that's the biggest barrier, is people accepting it, saying, yeah, the North is actually a good place to start a business. It's cheaper as well in terms of living expenses. From Manchester to London, it's a 2-hour train ride. Really, it's not that far. Newcastle, it's a 3-hour train ride. And, you know, Social Chain, you know, you've got so many great companies that come out from the North. It's just people just don't want to, I don't know what it is. It's just that mental barrier that they're not from London. And a lot of people do travel down to London, so.
I have a question, Michelle. I'm just curious myself. Do you feel like there's, because you mentioned it being communal, do you feel like the support system is like stronger then, and that maybe is an advantage because of the tight-knitness of the community there?
I was quite active in both ecosystems, in both London and Manchester. It's just on a smaller scale, but you still know the same people. Like, I go to conferences in London, I bump into the same people in London as I would if I went to all the events in Manchester. It's just, and Newcastle is a lot smaller, but you know everyone, and then it becomes very collegial. And I found that in Manchester as well. London, yes, it's bigger, and you don't meet people all the time, but you still bump into people. So it's, yeah, I think it's great.
I think Manchester is one of the like up and coming startup hubs, isn't it? Like, maybe compared to Newcastle and some other areas, I do hear a lot more in Manchester than I have heard of ever in like Newcastle or some other cities. So
I think that's a mental barrier. And I think it's about promoting companies that come out of Newcastle, Leeds, you know, even Liverpool. I think it's them being able to shout out about themselves through all the noise that's going on in London as well. So it's, everyone's competing. But yeah, Manchester is the second biggest city.
Perfect, perfect. If you are a rule-breaking female founder looking to make an impact in the world through technology, then why not check out Men and Ears podcast, Cutting Through Tech. On this show, technology becomes as simple as everyday English, removing the barriers so you can think, strategize, and execute like a female tech CEO. You can find the show by searching on any podcast provider or just visiting www.cuttingthroughtech.com. Check it out. So anyways, ladies, back to more your entrepreneurial stories and challenges. Obviously, you both said that you came over on visas, and I think you've been through different visas throughout your journeys. What are the challenges, you know, in trying to get these visas, in the process of going through them and applying for them? How have you found the whole visa experience?
Michelle, you want to go first?
Yeah, you go.
Oh, gosh. So, you know, I'll tell an interesting story, actually, about how I came onto this visa. So when I made the decision, it was 2014 that I knew I wanted to move to London at the end of my sabbatical. And I joke sometimes that I was marooned in the U.S. and people kind of roll their eyes. They're like, really? But I kept looking for different ways. Is how could I come here? How could I viably, you know, start a business here? Build a life here. And I realized that for me, I kept looking at visas, and I didn't see a viable one that I felt was a good fit for me. I almost came on the entrepreneur one, but for various reasons, it didn't work out. But it's a long story, but I ended up, you know, at the end, just coming to London for a visit to see some friends, used the month that I was there to kind of do a little bit of networking. And I think it was the last day that I was in London visiting, I had been introduced to someone that worked at a VC fund. And when I met this person, they had looked at my CV just to talk a little bit about things. And at the end, I don't know what prompted me to think about it, but I said, have you ever seen anybody get what's called the Tech Nation visa? Because online, it looked impossible. It looked like you had to be Steve Jobs to get it. I thought, I'll never get this visa, right? And he looked at me funny, and he says, you realize that, as you know, he was in a position where he looked at talent and things like that. He's like, you realize that I actually look at the visa applications, and this, they're not advertised, these people, of who looks at the visa applications. Said, I'm one of the basically few people that look at it. He's like, you should apply. And I spent, I think it was 2 or 3 months, just literally endlessly fine-tuning this application with 10 pieces of evidence and you know, introduction letter and, you know, recommendations, all these things. And it was a daunting process. It is definitely a barrier to getting the visa, for sure. but it was definitely worth it. And that made, it made all the difference. But it, I think a lot of, and Michelle and I have had this conversation, so Michelle, you can chime in too, but we specifically have talked about how one of the concerns we have is that we feel a lot of people are daunted and may not apply. But number two, more importantly, we've noticed that it's skewed towards a lot of men. And I think sometimes women, we kind of feel like if we're not 100% qualified for something, we're not going to go for it, versus, you know, you could be 70%, but somebody on the outside might think that you're at 100% or at 90%. So I think we sometimes sell ourselves short or don't even give ourselves the permission to try.
No, 100%. And that's on my list of questions. We're definitely going to get onto that. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about that. But Michelle, let me ask you the same question about the visas and add a little bit on. Would you change anything about the process and the challenges that you have maybe been through?
So I've been on three different visas. So firstly, the spousal visa, as I said, but when that came to an end, I was kind of like, oh no, what do I do? I've been in the UK for a few years and I really want to stay. So I had to, the only thing that was available for me at the time was an entrepreneur's visa. So that was quite easy to get. But the problem with the entrepreneur's visa, it's called the innovator's visa now, but that only gave me 3.5 years. And when you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to start a business within 3.5 years, it's not a lot, especially when you're new to the country. And, you know, investors look at you, if you were to look for investment, it's like, why will I invest in someone who's only here for 3.5 years or can stay only for 3.5 years, right? So then, you know, towards 3 years, I thought, I need to get a new visa. So that's when the exceptional talent visa came up. And again, that was the whole daunting experience. It used to be called the exceptional talent visa, but they recently, only this year, changed it to the global talent visa. So it's not as scary, you know, as one might think. I'm not exceptionally talented. No one ever thinks they're exceptionally talented. They're only doing their job and they're just trying to achieve and be successful as much as they can. So that is, as Susan said, that's the biggest hurdle is, am I good enough? And because I consult in this area now, the first thing I say to my client is, don't worry about that exceptional talent thing. It's still a criteria. You need to be endorsed with exceptional talent or exceptional promise, but just look at the criteria. And you can, if you, so long as you meet the criteria and produce evidence to show that, you know, you meet those criteria, then don't worry about the exceptional talent thing. That's just in your head. And they have to say, they have to kind of give a benchmark so that you can then, you know, try and achieve that goal. Looking back, would there be any changes? Yeah, because I just think that this whole process, it is extremely stressful. And I think the first change was changing the name. Yes, that's a huge change and that's great. The second thing is everyone's story is different. And to put everyone in a pigeonhole and to get this checklist, it's really hard because people are different, you know. And that, I think, not even allowing them the opportunity to even, you know, state their case physically or have an interview process, I don't know, but then that might just be too long. I'm not sure, but I don't know. I just think everyone's story is so different and each story is so inspiring that I think there could be, I don't know, further opportunities to tell their story.
No, definitely. And Susan, is there anything that you might add or you would like to change about the process?
Well, it's interesting because I see that there, one of the, I think it's just a basic thing for me was just more awareness of the visa itself. I think there's so many people I've talked to that had, you know, these in quotes exceptionally talented people, you know, like Michelle and myself that are on this visa that just have never even heard of the visa. And it's a game changer if you get it. It's suddenly, because I think the game changer about it is that you are not tied to a company, you are not tied to a spouse. You basically go straight to indefinitely leave to remain. You can start a business, you can work for someone. So like a lot of entrepreneurs, you can build up your capital at a job, but then you can, you know, what in your skill set, then you can start your business. So there's a lot of flexibility there. But now I'm seeing that there's been a lot of push around creating awareness, especially, you know, dare I say the word, Brexit. But I was on a call actually with a few of us ambassadors for the visa were invited on a call to speak with Downing Street's business advisor and talk about what can we do to help grow talent in the UK. And, you know, I've never seen so many resources put behind this now, so that's there. People know about it. They can see it. And I think there's more resources around telling stories. Michelle brought up a very important point, which is, and I think, you know, I've definitely had people come to me and say, here's my story, but I don't fit the kind of what it says on online. I don't think I'll get it. And, you know, and you listen to them, and it's just an incredible story of someone that has huge talent that can clearly contribute significantly to the UK economy. And they're going to, we would potentially miss this person. So I think that awareness and showing people variations in story, like Michelle mentioned, are critical. So people at least then have the permission.
No, definitely. And obviously you've both been through it yourselves, and so you've probably been with people in similar situations. And Michelle, you know, help and advise people, and obviously you do two seasons as an ambassador. But is there a certain continent or specific country maybe that we see a lot more businesses try and come over to the UK from, or is there a few that are very popular? And yeah, tell me a little bit about, you know, the different countries and businesses that you've worked with and seen come through the process.
Well, my clients, actually, a lot of them come from US, Nigeria, Canada. I've yet to help on a fellow Australian, actually. But yeah, those are the main countries. And I think US is pretty clear why, because obviously there's Silicon Valley and there's lots of tech people working there. Actually, another one is India. Yeah, US and India are my biggest clients. But Susan would be able to tell more of the stats around the Tech Nation alumni as well.
No, you're very right. I mean, especially with India now, because, you know, you're seeing the variation in the policies of immigration in my own country, in the U.S. So I think a lot of talent that might be looking to potentially go to the U.S. are instead saying, well, you know, U.K.'s the right choice for me now. Because, you know, it's also, I've also talked with people in the alumni that say geographically it's closer to home, etc. So definitely India, definitely America, you know. We just blanket the globe. I mean, we have people from Siberia, you know, Michelle mentioned Nigeria. I mean, you know, you name a continent, maybe the exception of Antarctica. And I mean, we have someone from there. And that's what's so amazing about, you know, Michelle and I have the privilege to be part of the alumni network, where obviously we develop a network in the UK, but that network then blankets the entire globe, which is, I mean, incredible, if you can imagine. I mean, we have actually a few different entrepreneurs from Belarus, for example. I mean, they're super fascinating. You know, some of the stuff that they're doing, incredible, incredible talents that's come here. So a lot of, I definitely see a lot of Eastern Europeans that come, you know, and it'll be exciting now because, you know, as Michelle and I both know, with, you know, the advent of Brexit, you know, they're changing it now. So it's, I believe, as far as I know, this is going to be open to the EU as well. So now we're literally going to have everybody from the world, which is just, it's exciting, it's interesting, and that's where the innovation comes. When you have so much diversity, so many different ideas colliding together, that's where you start to see some of these cool things happen and the real entrepreneurship and entrepreneurial spirit and ideas and innovation. So it's exciting.
Definitely, and like you say, it's not about having the same sort of people and the same sort of businesses from all the same backgrounds. I mean, we're talking now about different countries, but it applies to everything, doesn't it? Diversity, gender, ethnicity, everything. You need to have different people to come together and bring different ideas to the table and etc. Before we move on to kind of talking about diversity in that direction, because I am keen to talk to you both about that, you both now help businesses, you know, with their visas and coming over and starting up. How do you help businesses? You know, you've been through it yourself, and now that's kind of like both what you do. Is there certain advice that you give, like as a general, yeah, like point to point, and how do you help them? What do you tell them?
Go on, Susan, as an ambassador, go on.
Well, I want to make sure I understand the question clearly. Are we talking about helping people to, what advice do I give if you're applying for the visa, or what advice do I give if you're starting a company using the visa? Because there's a big difference. They're two huge barriers, so one, they're different.
To help companies starting a business using the visa, like coming over and starting a business in the UK.
Yeah, I think that there's some basics here that people don't necessarily think about that are really important. I think a lot of people that come here are already kind of global and get it and have lived in other places, but obviously you have to be ready to, you are your business if you're an entrepreneur, so you have to be at your best. So when you come over, you're gonna go through culture shock, frustrations, all that type of stuff. So you have to be the best version of you and really do good self-care, be ready to go. I think that's really important. And that can be, I think, underestimated, because if you fail, your business fails. Also, too, I would say you know, it's really difficult just to learn a new culture. It's the UK, there's a lot more subtleties in terms of communication and things like that. And if you say the wrong thing, you can really burn some bridges quickly. So understanding that, and Michelle, you can comment, but I feel like that is a very fine art. You know, I feel like here, the communication style is, there is a lot of politeness and a lot of collaboration, which is wonderful. But some cultures are not used to that, so they have to learn to adapt. And especially from the standpoint of speaking to your customer, knowing a different customer base, I think is obviously crucial. It seems like an obvious one, but a lot of people just want to make assumptions and pin it onto the customer. No, you have to get in there and really understand them. It's crucial, you know. And then I think also too, just simple things like knowing the lay of the land. We get so many questions, you know, in our Slack channels about, you know, can I get this funding, or, you know, where do I go for this? How, you know, like even basic things like setting up a business, like the lawyers, or, you know, who do you trust as an accountant? And just even things like that can turn into headaches that are bigger and take up much more time and can, you know, stunt your growth. How do I get funding? How do I approach this? Do I go angels, VC? Am I ready for this? You know, how do I approach them? How will they believe in me in terms of credibility? Because I have an accent. A lot of people are concerned about that. And then obviously, you know, I think a big piece, I think is the game changer, is you have to, when you hit the ground, you need to start meeting people. You need to start, you know, building. I hate to use the word network because it sounds a little clinical, but you need to start, you know, looking around, meeting other like-minded people, you know, having conversations about where they're going, where you're going, how you can help each other, you know, where are your skill gaps, and being really self-aware in terms of where those gaps are. And one of them being, you don't know the culture here. So how can you ask for help or get a mentor or look to other people to help fill those gaps so you can close down that, you know, that knowledge curve as fast as possible? That would be my advice.
And it was great advice. Michelle, is there anything you can add to that?
Well, I've got notes, and Susan hit every single one of those points, and it's so true. The first thing, especially someone who, and I help a lot of clients, not only who are already in the UK that are on existing visas, but those who want to come from other countries. And it's easier only to help those who are already in the UK because they understand the culture. You know, if they've already been here for a few years, they kind of already know just certain nuances that you just don't realize that people who aren't from, who haven't lived in the UK just don't know about, and, you know, just explaining that. But it's one thing to explain, but it's another thing to live through it. And, you know, I had to do that for the first few years when I lived in the UK, is I just to understand the culture. You know, Australia and UK seem like very similar countries, but they're absolutely not. Like, I got a culture shock when I moved to the UK. Yes, exactly. Definitely professional services, you know, because again, your network. I lost all my networks when I moved to the UK. I suddenly had no one. And I thought, I didn't realize how much I relied on my own networks in my own country. So the first thing I did was I went out to the tech community, and I just went to so many tech community events, because they were then all of a sudden my new network. And that's why I think we'll go on to talk further about women in tech organizations and, you know, any organizations, like-minded organizations that can help you through that challenge. So yeah, it took me about 3 years to understand the British culture. And even then, like, I've got my British citizenship now, but that's 7 years in, and I still struggled with the life in the UK test when I had to take it. And, you know, I also asked British people questions from the life in the UK test, and they couldn't answer those questions either. So I was like, okay. But yeah, it was a good thing to do, but it's one of those things that is an extra stress in addition to running your business. So it's hard.
So hard. And I mean, I've personally been to America, and I've personally been to Australia, and I had the most amazing time. Everyone was very friendly. But you think, because I don't know why, but a lot of people have this assumption that we're very similar as countries and nations. And, you know, like, oh, it'll be easier going to America or Australia than it might be going to China or India, for example. And although, you know, we both speak like the same language to an extent, it's very different. Like you said, culture-wise, humour-wise, like, yeah, it's just a bit of a shock, because you do just think, oh, everyone's just going to be like us, or like you probably think everyone's just going to be like Australians, everyone's going to be like Americans. Yeah, we're very, very different. But in a good way, I think, like you say, it complements each other and people work really well together. So yeah, very, very interesting points there. We'll move on to diversity because I feel like we're all itching to talk about it and we've got a lot to say on it. One of my first points that I wanted to ask in response to what you just said, Michelle, you said you went to a lot of events first moved over here. I'm sure you did as well, Susan. So this is a question to both of you. Did you go to many women-only events or the women's events that were focused at women, women in tech, female founders? Did you find them useful or sometimes are we, you know, segregating ourselves unnecessarily? What are your opinions on these sorts of events?
So Susan, you can tell our story about how we met actually.
It's like you're reading my mind. It's crazy. This is actually how Michelle and I met. So I had just arrived. Michelle had been here for a while. And I think I'd only been here for a couple months or so. And ironically, it was a friend of mine that had moved here from Silicon Valley that invited me to the Wonder Women in Tech event. So it was a women's focused event. And, you know, she happened to have an extra ticket. I thought, you know, what the heck? This is a great opportunity. I saw Michelle and I recognized her from her blog online about getting the visa. And of course, you know, I'm a shy person, as we can all tell, so I'm being sarcastic. And of course, I go running up to her and said, oh my gosh, I said, I just got my visa. And we started talking and we connected over that. And I think that, you know, in terms of going to women-focused events or other events, I mean, I think there's value in both in different ways. And I think it's critical to see the value in both. You know, I'm very careful even, you know, when I talk with the visa alumni or other areas, I don't want to ever make it where it's not inclusive of men. But I think that's the key, because you can say, oh, well, it should be only women. I think it's important to have a conversation with women about if there are challenges, whether it's you're not negotiating, you're not speaking up, or you're, you know, you are struggling with, you know, how do I fit in when I, you know, I've got bright red hair, you know, and I'm 5'4" and I kind of look like Pippi Longstocking, if you've ever heard of that character, right? So, you know, right? So it's kind of like you walk in the room, it's like you don't want to be viewed as Pippi Longstocking, you want to be viewed as something else, you know? I don't walk in as like, you know, a 6 foot, you know, 2 guy with, you know, like short hair and like, yeah, like a suit. So, you know, that those type of things. So there are some natural differences in how you navigate those. Just like if you were, you know, any area where you have a gap, if you're trying to navigate, you always want to get up on that knowledge. And as a woman, if there are gaps, then this is a great opportunity to do that. And at the end of the day, I'm a very big believer in supporting other women, and not just women and men, but I have very close girlfriends and, you know, that are through the visa group and through professional networks. And there is a support person on both a personal and professional level. And it is game changing. It's part of that idea of network and support, because if you're supported personally, professionally, again, it's going to reflect in your business. When you face a business problem, I can drop it up into my WhatsApp chat and be like, can I get some help? And it's really useful. So I think those bonds, however you make them, are important. But I do think it's important to have separate events in that regard, so that if there is a skill gap, just like you'd fill a skill gap and anywhere else that you have, right? I think it's important.
Definitely. And Michelle, obviously, we'll go to you now. And it's a big question for you, because obviously the women in wearables, like, yeah, take it away.
Yeah, so it's one of those things that when I started Made With Glove, it's a wearable tech company, and when I did it in the first year, I went to all these conferences. I went to Silicon Valley, I went to London, and all the products and people at the conferences were men. And I was actually networking in the women's bathroom because, you know, because I was at the time I was developing product. I have since changed, but it was specifically targeted towards women. That was my market. And just speaking to my target market, I couldn't find them at conferences either. So I thought, you know what, there should be a Women of Wearables, just because I want to know what other products women are developing for women. So it wasn't until a year later that I co-founded it with another Woman of Wearable. We met at the Wearable Tech Conference, and we started it over just Twitter. We just started a Twitter account, and it just snowboard. It was supposed to be a London tech community, you know, but it ended up being a global community. Within 8 months of starting Women of Wearables, we had 8,000 followers all over the world, and it just grew just organically. Luckily, my co-founder Maria, she was a PR strategist and digital marketer, and she was also a co-founder of a wearable tech company. And because I had been running Made with Glove for a year, I kind of of already knew what needed, you know, publicly what people wanted to hear, what stories to tell. I already had a press kit. So together we actually created this amazing community, and it's still running. I had to exit, but Maria's still heading it up, and it's turned into a massive community with like 20,000 followers, with all these ambassadors all over the world. So that, you know, we just gave women the visibility to showcase what they were doing, what products they were developing. You know, femtech is now huge. Back then, we didn't know what it was, but I thought of an event, a femtech event, back in November 2017, and we ran it, and that just snowballed. It was amazing. We had so many great products for women in the femtech industry.
That's amazing. And I've noticed that with our latest issue, it focuses on female founders, and a lot of female founders we come across are in the health tech and especially the femtech industry. And it's amazing to see that obviously these women have had challenges. You know, there's been things that they've thought, I need this in my life, you know, these products, this is going to make my life easier, it's going to make other women's life easier. And so they've gone for it and they've created these ideas. And yeah, it's amazing to see. I mean, thank you for starting Women of Wearables. I really enjoy Women of Wearables now to this day. So
fantastic. Oh, I'm so pleased to hear. And it's such a great brand and a great company. And Maria's just doing an amazing job. And I'm so glad that I was able to start it. I knew I didn't want to start it on my own because I already had Made with Glove. And she was the perfect person to do it with. And then, you know, letting her take the lead in London, especially because I was based in Manchester, Newcastle. So I was traveling a lot back then, but it was something that I'm so proud of that I created with Maria.
Oh, amazing. And you've both touched on this in your last points, some of the challenges that the women face. Are there any other like big challenges that, you know, women in the both entrepreneurial and the tech space face that the male counterparts may not face?
Michelle, you want to start or you want me to go?
Go on. I'm going to think about this one.
But I have to say one thing too, Michelle. Honestly, I love hearing you talk about the community you made. It's so inspiring, and it makes me proud to be your friend and hear all these cool things that you've done to contribute to women. In terms of some of the things that we face as women versus men in tech world, I think it's just like anything. You know, you talk about things where, you know, you've had software engineers that have gone through and presented code, and you remove the name and give the blind bias, you might get a different reaction. And it depends on the person. Not everybody's going to have a different reaction. Some people are very enlightened and, you know, will be accepting of either gender. Some people are still evolving. So I think it's being aware of that. I think it's also, you know, if there are, it also depends a lot of times on what you're being exposed to. If there, for example, if you're part of a bro culture or, you know, that type of thing. How do you navigate that, right? If it is men, you know, I even had an opportunity in my career where they used to do in America, fantasy American football is a thing, right? And you could easily feel excluded. Well, me, I said, this is, ironically, could have been an opportunity to exclude me because I have no interest in American football. However, I really got along well with the team, and I loved to trash talk. And they said, it's all you need to do is trash talk. So I got the shipping manager who was there to be my coach, draft the team. And I would just ask him, you know, on Sundays, did we win, did we not? And if I did, I would go in there and trash talk in the mornings. And it was a great bonding experience, right? But there's opportunities like that where there could be, right? You could be discluded or included, and there's an opportunity for inclusion. So learning those kind of opportunities and how do you navigate those? And are there places where it is, you know, there's kind of conversations where if you're not a male, it could be awkward. Or, you know, even sometimes for men, you know, I've heard concerns from men of how do I have a conversation, make it equal amongst men and women, you know, if I have a direct report, that type of thing, if I'm working with someone and leaving their door open or only having lunchtime meetings and not having dinner meetings, things like that. So, you know, there's definitely a lot that women face. I mean, I think the biggest ones that I will definitely say that can really change the game, in my opinion, are really having the permission to ask for what you want. I see that it doesn't happen. And I had another friend of mine who is an entrepreneur, was hiring, and she said she hired both men and women. And I'm gonna ask you ladies, I'm gonna get your thoughts. Guess the percentage of men that negotiated. Take a guess. What would you say? Of 100%.
Probably 100%.
What would you say, Anna?
Yeah, I'll go 95 just to change up.
Close. It was 80%. Okay, how many women do you think negotiated? What percentage?
Probably 10.
I was going to say 20, but maybe I'm optimistic.
You're both higher than expected. Zero. So, Yes, exactly. And we talk about things like the wage pay gap and things like that, but then we have stories like that. And if you're already starting in your first job and someone has negotiated, they're already starting a tier higher than you in pay, and that keeps that, you know, expanding, and how would you say it? It kind of has an interest on it over and over and over again, and just extrapolates. So those are my thoughts around it. It's not just about what are the barriers, but what can you do about it? And I see those as two areas women can look at and just gut check. And if you're not doing it right, one of the things I do is I have friends, you know, and I'm pretty sure, Michelle, you've been there for me even this, where I gut check with friends on situations and say, you know, am I lowballing myself in a negotiation, you know? Is this the right way to approach a client, you know? That type of thing. And I get that support that I need so that even if I do feel fear in asking for what I want, I do it because I know it's important for business and I know I need to do that for myself. It's a lot easier for clients. Negotiating for clients is a lot different than negotiating for yourself. So creating those hacks to help yourself ask for permission and get the help you need.
Absolutely. And I think, like, you know, ask for what you want. For me, I do ask. And how I tell my clients or my friends or advise people is if you don't ask, you don't get. So you have to ask. The worst they can say is no, right? But also, you've planted a seed because it might not be now. It might not be a no now. It might be a yes later. So you kind of just, you know, you can't expect a yes every time because obviously people have to trust you. You have to develop this relationship with them. So you're just asking the question for maybe now to save for later.
I mean, there was an opportunity I had where I had a client that wanted to bring me on. And as I talked with them, they said, you know, it was an incredible opportunity that I really, really wanted. I mean, it had all kinds of, you know, things that I wanted to be involved with. And I said, okay. And they said, upfront, they said, but this is how much I can pay you upfront. That's what they literally said. They said, they didn't even talk about the project, anything. They just literally said, upfront, this is how much I can pay. Well, we go through, we talk about the project and all this stuff worked through. And at the end, you know, I said, okay, well, I said, you know, now's the time, let's talk about pricing. So, oh, you know, this is what I had. I said, ah, oh, I at this point, I'm going to need to ask for more. And they worked out a way through their own budgeting system that they used before, that because they said, oh, it's only this amount. Well, they have a special budget, right, that they put aside for other things. And they pulled from that budget. And I actually negotiated up 30%. So imagine that 30%, and you know, and that can make a huge difference right there, especially if you think about your salary for a year or, you know, a project that you work on that can be quite lucrative. You know, those things, when you add that kind of percentage, that's a game changer. That's more disposable income, right?
No, definitely. And like you say, it's not just the challenges, it's what we can be doing about that. So yeah, definitely. Taking it back slightly, in terms of businesses coming over to the UK and going through the visa process, is it sometimes harder for females doing this than it is for males, or are women disregarded more when they're trying to go through the visa process? Have you seen any issues with diversity when it comes to businesses trying to come overseas and going through the process?
Yeah, so I did ask for stats. I mean, they are quite, they're not like recent, but it's about a 70-30, isn't it, Susan? Yeah, because it's a tech visa. So obviously, you know, tech is a male-dominated industry. So you would expect, you know, more men to apply, but also to receive it. And, you know, because it's a tech visa, people in technical roles would apply more. Whereas this visa actually is open for tech and business people. So it can be for business people working in the tech industry. It's just because it's like a tech visa, more tech people are applying. And this is my job also, as well as Susan's job, to go out and promote it and say, well, actually, I'm a digital marketer. You know, I'm a consultant. I do business type work in the tech industry. You can apply as well. And this is what I tell my clients. So yes, it is a 70-30, but I did see some stats that 30% of women who apply, you know, about 27% of women actually get endorsed. That's pretty high. So my goal is to actually tell more women to apply, because the chances of them getting endorsed is quite high. Most of the women that I help actually get it as well. Last summer I helped 5 women and all 5 got it. So I was very pleased. My success rate for women is like 100%. So yeah, it's one of those things that I just need to tell more women about. Granted, you know, I do help men as well, and you know, they do really well, and that some don't get it as well. So it's just stats, and I don't want to sort of, you know, distinguish between men and women all the time. It's just the stats that tell you, it's the majority. But you know, there are different cases, you know, it's on a case-by-case basis and different scenarios.
Definitely. And Michelle, is there any particular changes that you would like to see to help more women and to help the diversity and equality in the industry?
So with the work that I do, definitely I need to promote it more. You know, I run webinars every 2 weeks, you know, either interviewing inspiring women and men who receive the visas, and also I go through the process and talk about how they can go on and apply as well. And this is, you know, how my consulting business started was actually me writing a blog about my own journey and my own process, and that's how it went viral, and then, you know, more people started contacting me. So the more information I put online, the more people hopefully will find out about it. And you know, the great work that Susan's doing, she heads up the alumni and she also is an ambassador. You know, we're all doing our part, really. You know, the success stories really do inspire others, because we are the role models for people who are actually wanting to come over. And we aren't Steve Jobs, we're just normal everyday people just doing our jobs so that we can live and work in the UK. And I think the more people who shout about it, about their talent and their achievements in tech, I think the more people will apply for it and get it as well. There used to be a cap, but there's no cap anymore. It used to be 200, then it went to 1,000. Now there's no cap, so there's absolutely no reason why people shouldn't consider this route.
Definitely. And Susan, with the work that you're doing, have you seen an increase in women over the past few years? As the years go on, is number of women getting higher?
I know that when I first started being an ambassador for the group, that one of the things that we were trying to do with Tech Nation was one of the goals was to promote more women. And you know, right now I definitely think we have more women applying, but I think also the percentage is higher overall, to be fair as well. You know, I think more women are coming in. I think more women are asking for permission at this point. I know for the people that I see coming through the alumni, it's definitely still, we definitely have more males in the alumni for sure. But I definitely see, you know, a lot of inspiring women, and I see them pulling in other people, because that's one of the ways that people learn about the visa is through other people. So I think it's a huge asset if you already know someone that already has a visa, then to go ahead and walk you through the process. So I think that gives a lot of women permission, and that helps increase the numbers as well. So
definitely. And it's great to see two, like I say, inspirational women doing a lot of work and working with other females. So obviously the change is happening.
It's slow, but it is happening. You know, we're working in it, so we can see it happening. I know, again, it's all about numbers and statistics, isn't it? But you know, if we can just keep doing what we're doing and helping, you know, even one person, that's still, you know, it does take time. It will take time.
Definitely. Ladies, it's been an absolute pleasure. I want to end on a high, so I'm going to ask you. You both have achieved so much in your careers, in your life. The list is endless, so I won't list it all. But what do you have planned for the future? Is there anything that you maybe haven't achieved yet that is on your bucket list? It doesn't have to be work-wise. It can be personal as well. But yeah, what do you want from the future?
Well, one of the things I would like is for Michelle to come and visit. I'd like to see Michelle. So that's one thing. So in terms of professional, you can probably tell in my mind, it's always been weighing on my mind, which is I would love to contribute more to helping women with negotiation specifically, and potentially formalizing that into a business. That's something I've been looking into, because when I work with clients and stuff, I always look to say, where can I add the most value, and how can I actually, if they're going to invest in me, how do I maximize that? And I always looked at, you know, how could I contribute to women specifically, and where is that opportunity? And for me, it's always been, this is one of, I think, the biggest levers to push, I think, in my opinion. So I think it's a skill set that can be taught and can be nurtured to help women. So that's something I've been interested in. I also have interest in, God help me, running a half marathon. So I've been training for that. So yeah. And then the last thing is on my sabbatical, I'm, you know, because I can be a little hippy dippy. I ran off to India and I started learning yoga. Well, I knew yoga already, but I got certified to be a yoga instructor. So on this visa, I'm not allowed to teach. So that's one of the disadvantages of the tech visa. But I would like to start maybe just around charity and stuff, just, you know, teaching yoga so people can make donations, you know, that type of thing to like the animal shelters, etc. So that's something I would, you both should come, seriously, if I do it on, like, cause with COVID, if I do it online, I'll have to send y'all the link. Or else, you know, if I do it in person, you guys will have to come. And yeah, seriously, yeah.
Hey, I love yoga. It's so good for your mind as well as your body. So 100% I will be there. Well, I don't know if you'll be able to top that, Michelle, but do you have anything?
Right. So I've got two main goals that I've thought about. And the goal, obviously, is for me professionally is to increase the diversity in the UK by helping as many foreign entrepreneurs and talent, because this visa is not just about entrepreneurs. They can be employees working in the tech industry as well. And if I can help them get endorsed and, you know, I will help them realize their dream of living and working in the UK. It's not just about them, it's about their families as well. I'm actually not just helping them, but also, you know, their partners and their kids, giving them a better life in the UK. At the moment, it's 70-30, women and men. I'm trying to increase that to 50-50 in 2 years, hopefully, by, you know, talking a lot about our successful journeys and my clients' successful journeys. At the moment, there's only about 1,500 of us that receive these endorsements. So I'm hoping to increase that. You know, come on, Susan, we can make it to, you know, 10,000 in 5 years. Come on, we can do this. So that's my diversity goal. But my Made with Glove goal, my little business that I started 7 years ago, my startup, my innovation goal is to basically get an innovation grant. I did receive a small one just before COVID. Can't talk much about it because I'm under confidentiality. My team is actually working on its fourth prototype. If I get this bigger innovation grant, they can take it hopefully to a commercial product in the next 6 months, hopefully. So I'm so excited. I had a meeting with them 2 weeks ago and it's gone. It's massive. Like the journey from, you know, where I started to where it is now, I'm actually seeing it. And every time I see new prototypes, I just, it's a little tear because it's been 7 years. It's, you know, because I've had so much stuff to deal with, you know, the visa stuff, that is a big stress for a startup entrepreneur. But now that that's over, I've got my British citizenship. Now I can really focus on my business. So they're my two main goals.
Amazing. Both of you, like, so inspiring, obviously, to myself and I'm sure to everyone listening. So yes, thank you so much for sharing your goals and your journey so far. I've never had an episode that's been so much fun and so informative at the same time.
Oh, so pleased. I had a really good time and it's great to see you again, Susan, and really great to speak to you, Anna. You've been such a supportive and inspiring person, you know, that's what's important in the whole tech community and the tech ecosystem is having support from all angles.
No, thank you so much for your kind words and for just joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure having you both on. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much, Anna.
Serial Entrepreneur.